Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. This week, we have two lovely sponsors, Lynda.com. Go to Lynda.com, LYNDA.com/shoptalk, and you get a free week of their thing, which is all, it's all about learning with them. They have over 77,000 videos there. They're all tutorials for learning all kinds of different stuff. We'll tell you about what you can learn later on in the show. And Environments for Humans, their latest thing coming up is the online conference, the RWD Summit, rwdsummit.com, April 16th through 18th. 3 days of the best of the best talking about responsive web design. Go to just one day or any day, and you can go to it from anywhere in the world. You could bring your whole company to it if you want. We'll tell you more about that later in the show. But for now, let's do this thing.
Hello, and welcome to episode 60 of the Shop Talk Show, a sound effects podcast that also covers front-end web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody. And with us, we have Samantha Warren with us. Yay.
Hey, guys. I wasn't expecting that. Quite the entrance.
Otherwise known as Samantha Toy on Twitter. Toy is your middle name. Yep.
That is true.
Otherwise known as Style Tiles.
From time to time, yeah.
That's what Dave is referring to, is this very popular new concept that Samantha kind of invented, I would say. Huh? Maybe you could tell us about that. We might as well talk about it because it's going to come up.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I would use the word invented, but I think it was just sort of a culmination of a lot of different things I had seen people doing over a period of time and things that needed to be done and sort of needed to be packaged up. Because I think anytime anyone in the design industry wants to try something new, it's kind of like a hard sell to your boss or to the rest of the company. And so I saw this idea where I knew that I needed something a little different, but I also knew that if it was going to work, kind of everyone needed to be doing it. Like other people needed to be doing it. Because of course you're going to get, well, oh yeah, I'd be happy to do that. But the other agency bidding on this project is going to give us X, Y, and Z. So kind of trying to get it out there because I felt like it was something that really worked well for me and getting it out there so other people could use. And it kind of goes along with, I think Chris and I had talked a little bit about this, but I've worked a lot with developers, and I'm really into the concept of open source development and the open source community in general. And so I got really excited about this idea that as a designer, I might be able to open source my design process and provide the tools and provide the instruction to maybe take something that I use and works really well for me and have other people use it and then maybe build upon it.
Yay. So what's the, like, just in case nobody's ever heard of it, can we do the 2 minutes or whatever on like the background of it or I mean, not just what it is?
Yeah. So when kind of moving back all the way to the like beginning of designing websites, I found when I first started that we were doing the same things. Like we were presenting 3 design comps, like mock-ups, pictures of websites to clients. Even though
like a full-fledged photoshopped finished website, like,
right,
1800 pixel tall thing,
right, and that totally works if you're presenting like a logo, like, or you're presenting maybe a brochure, or you're presenting ideas for a brand. But for a website, it's not the same type of thing at all. It's you're presenting so much more than that, and I just knew that it wasn't working. I was finding clients who were always unhappy with the process. I always ended up franking comping whatever it was. And in the end, no one was really stoked on the finished product, whether it was whether we went over budget, or I as a designer didn't feel proud of my work, or the client felt like they had compromised quite a bit because of the process. So I had worked quite a bit at an agency where we used mood boards, and I really loved the concept of mood boards. We'd also tried some things called simple comps, like what if we just comped up the first half of a page? But what was happening there was clients still weren't quite understanding what I was presenting to them.
Why is my page missing a footer?
Yeah, exactly. Or why, I don't understand why you're showing me pictures of chairs or pictures of cars. Yeah. There wasn't this
so
connection.
A mood board is like little
that's
snippets
not the
of
text that goes on my homepage.
Exactly. So
because mood boards are too abstract for a client to get sometimes.
Right, right. So for me, it was a little bit about like, hey, let's take some of these concepts and sort of put them together and refine them and start to build a visual language. Because a lot of times for me, it was like, I'm not communicating well enough with for this client to get things done as fast as I need to get them done within the time constraints and the budget that I have. So it was kind of a more of an idea of like creating a framework, and the style tile was a piece of that framework. And a lot of people ask me about like what a style tile itself is, and I've created a framework that works for me on a lot of my projects, like publications or nonprofits or maybe a community website, but you could change or really adapt a style tile to be any collection of elements that sort of have the same theme across different options in order to communicate better with the client. And I've heard other people who use style tiles in a lot of different ways. I mean, a lot of people are using them now as kind of like semi-smaller style guides in order to communicate internally maybe they have an in-house staff of designers and they hire contractors. Maybe they have a group of people who work on the web and then a group of people who work just on their emails. But people seem to be using them quite a bit for lots of different in lots of different ways, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The people that you kind of, you know, that it's a movement in a way, and people kind of reinterpret it what's useful to them.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's not just like, I made this thing, use it right. You're not doing it, you know? Like, you could be a little, the bad way to be a little, would be to be too protective over what a style tile is. But
yeah, I think that would like be really open. Limiting for our community. If we continue, like, if, as a community, like, the more we say, you must do this, I think that only really limits the possibilities for how creative people can get with how they approach design.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like style tiles present it's prescriptive, but not overly prescriptive in what you can, should do for across a whole system, like a whole website. Am I narrowing that down correctly?
Well, it's prescriptive in the fact in its branding to some degree, mm-hmm. right? Like, it has this name because it's catchy and it explains what you're showing. You're showing like a tile of different pieces of stylistic elements. But that's more for the sales of trying to explain to your client what you're doing. So in that way, it's very prescriptive. Like, hey, I go to my boss and I say, hey, I really think we should use this new tactic that is very successful for a lot of other agencies, or it's very successful in creating a responsive design system. So in that way, I wanted it to be branded kind of prescriptively so that it mm-hmm. was something that everybody could talk about and you'd know what you were talking about. But as far as execution wise, I don't necessarily know if it is that prescriptive in that the fact that you're just sort of not, you're not doing too much work. You're doing just enough work to get your client on board with what you're doing.
Cool. So how much of the branding, I mean, just for this idea, this is interesting that you did branding just for an idea, but how much of the branding was devoted to getting a book on a book apart, whether or not that's happening? How much effort?
To my knowledge, that is not something in the works, but it was really, honestly, it came down to the fact that I had a client who wanted to try something new. They were willing to try something new because they had a really small budget, and they admitted to that. We know we have a really tight budget, but we want something really cool and we want to work with you. And it was a brand that the agency I worked at wanted to work with. And so I kind of said, well, if you want this to happen, you sort of have to trust me and we are going to do this. And it sort of just style tile came to me at that moment because I a lot of these things had sort of come together. I'd called the mood boards before. I'd called like things simple comps before. But at that moment, that's sort of when it was born to actually start documenting this and putting it together as a process, because I worked with a team and we needed to all sort of move forward as to having that as an option, especially if it worked, and it did. It was very successful the first time we did it.
Cool.
So was this, it was kind of birthed that when you were at Vidget?
No. So this was at phase two. We did a lot of mood boarding at Vidget Labs. They have a really creative methodology for how they go about working with clients. But a lot of the clients they work with are startups. And what I often find is that I work with publications or brands that already exist or already have style guides. And that's where the mood boarding sort of started to break down.
Okay.
Cool. And so phase two, so you worked at Vidget, you worked at phase two, maybe not in that order. Phase two is like a Drupal-y shop, if I'm correct.
Yeah, we champion Drupal as a solution.
Interesting. Okay. So, and now where are you at?
I'm at Twitter.
Very cool. Twitter. I'm going to Google this thing. Tweetar. Cool. So Twitter is really cool. Chris and I have lots of friends there, but you know, Nikki Brown wrote in just before the show started, and she was curious curious how you like life in San Francisco now that you've moved out there. How's the design, dev, and work culture out there? Do you want to cover that real quick, and then we'll get in to the show?
Sure. Yeah. I lived in the Washington, D.C. area for about 6 years before coming out here. And I've had the amazing opportunity to visit quite a few refreshes around the country. And it's interesting to me because there's a community that reaches lots of different cities and sort of talks about the same sort of things and is really interested in front-end development and design and, you know, what we would call sort of like the web standards movement. And I was sort of used to that community. And then getting out here to San Francisco, it's definitely a little bit different. People are talking about different things. When you go to events, the topic of conversation is a little different. The titles that people have are a little different. What the expectations for different roles are a little different. But it's really interesting. It's an adventure. I feel a little bit more like I'm always discovering new things about the San Francisco culture because it is super creative and people are just making things all around. If anything, it's almost a bit of a shocking experience being somewhere you would never expect someone else to be and like talking about something that you know about, like HTML5 at the ice cream shop. Or, you know, things like that. Or, oh, actually, my hairdresser was asking me about Square and Jack Dorsey and things like that. And just really interesting things that, like, in another part of the country, I'd never really experienced before. But here in San Francisco, it seems to be the norm.
Interesting. My hairdresser does not know Jack Dorsey.
She knew quite a bit about... you know, just technology in general. And it was exciting. If anything, like it's just really invigorating. And at the same time, it's kind of confusing because you start to like adapt to this world where everybody knows what you're talking about. And then you get on the phone with I'll get on the phone with like my mom and she'll say something that, you know, is just much more in line with the way the rest of the country thinks about these things. And I kind of have to check myself from time to time.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
Very cool.
That's cool. So DC to San Francisco, and you give it an A. Can you give it a grade from A to F?
It's hard. It's like asking me which of my children are better. You know, like
apples and oranges.
It is. It's apples and oranges. It's all very different, and it's very exciting, but very different. And I love the DC community. They've got a lot of heart, soul, and passion. And all the communities, really, that I've had the opportunity to go to, Pittsburgh and Columbia, South Carolina, and Orlando. And there's so many really awesome communities that are popping up here, like all around the country that are kind of around the same things. And they're all very different, but all very exciting at the same time.
That's awesome. I give it a C. San Francisco, you get a C minus.
Are you trolling?
No. possibly. Do you have any drama or anything else for us, Dave?
I don't think I have any drama. I have some really sweet questions sent in from Andy Unleashed, if you guys will entertain me for a bit.
Go on.
Okay. Well, first question is, why did the Development Congress collapse? Why did the Web Development Congress collapse? Because both sides were absolutely positioned.
Pretty good.
Okay. Hey, guys, yeah, why did the boats collide? Because they were both floating to the left.
Floating to the left?
Float. Boats. Yeah. Hey.
Super good.
Hey, guys. Why was the cinema so bad?
Not why.
Because the display was blocked. Hey, but seriously, folks, hey, why was the color code driving a motorbike?
Why?
Because he was BADA55.
Waka, 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 waka. Hey, waka, waka. Ah, waka, waka, waka.
That's all I got. Thanks, everybody.
That's pretty
Shop
good.
Talk is a weekly podcast.
I can't believe we said no drama and the chat room was like, how about Google Reader shutting down? That's pretty hot drama.
Google Reader. This breaks my freaking heart.
Can we say, are we mad about, do you care, Samantha?
For me, I always use NetVibes anyway, which.
NetVibes?
I know.
Interesting.
I used to use NetVibes. I don't so much anymore. Think most of my keeping up with the web has sort of transformed into other channels, so it doesn't do anything for me. I'm not invested.
Yeah,
I want to use NetVibes now.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I'm wondering if I even have my account still up.
Is it web or desktop?
It's web. I might not even know my login, but for the most part, I get all my links through Twitter now, or through Pinterest, or what people send me in long emails.
I originate those Twitter links from my RSS feed because I read them and I'm like, this was an interesting article, and I tweet it.
See, there used to be this time where I could wake up every morning and open up my NetVibes like it was a newspaper and really get to sit there and drink my coffee and enjoy what people were writing all over the web. And it just isn't like that anymore. People aren't writing at the same velocity that they used to write at. I wish they did, though.
Dried up. Well, I don't know. You gotta. It takes maintenance. Gotta find the.
I think syndication and through non-publication channel. I don't know. That sounded really official. I just feel like syndication is such the heart of the web. You know, I don't want to have to like. Okay, now I have to switch to Tumblr to find all my Tumblr articles. Okay, now I have to switch to. Yeah. Medium to find all the Medium articles I like. If RSS dies, like everyone says it's going to, then that's sad times for me, but
I don't think it will. And for the record here, it's not RSS that is being canceled here. It's just an RSS reader, Google Reader, which is probably the number one RSS consumer. Mm-hmm. And it's the one that, like, if you're like, oh, you know what? I'd like to experiment with a new RSS reader because I just feel like it. A lot of people feel like that regularly. I'd say twice a week. I feel like that. And you just go to the Google app or the app store, whatever kind of app store. There's, if you have Android or anything, there'll be a variety of RSS reading apps in the store. And you'd be like, I'm going to try this one. Just see if I like it. For sure, you download that thing and open it up and it'll be like, what's your Google password? And it'll have Google authentication because it'll pull all your feeds in from Google Reader so that there's no like cost to switching RSS apps because just that's the canonical one. And now that's what makes this a bigger deal, whether you liked Google Reader, the actual website or not, we're losing the sync for all these things. And so there's people that are like popping up and trying to be that sync, and hopefully that will be good. Dig is making an RSS reader. Feedly is saying we'll make an API. Marco Arment said, hey, let's, whatever we do, let's make the API mimic the Google API so that the cost of development for switching whoever jumps on this, we don't have to write as much code because we'll make the API similar. A lot of smart stuff being said, I think.
Chris, I guess like your CSS Tricks is a pretty well-known blog. And as a independent publisher, do you think no RSS or no Google Reader kind of affects your business somewhat greatly or minimally?
Well, I had a conversation earlier this week at a meeting with a new company. It's going to affect Shop Talk Show a little bit too. I didn't even tell you that, Dave, just a little. It's good. It's going to give us money to advertise.
I love money.
Yeah. And they were thinking, hey, we should sponsor the CSS Tricks RSS feed because that's just something that I see you're not doing right now. It's been always one of those things like, yeah, that'd be cool. I'm not sure I want to go like the Daring Fireball like sponsor post thing, but to have a little like message at the bottom of the feed sold in like week blocks or something, I could do that. And now it's like, oh, but that number is going to go drastically down. You know, so it does affect me as a business. Can I charge as much as I would have knowing that, those readers are kind of going to go down? And how do you even measure those readers anymore? It's a difficult thing. That's another Google service is the one reliable way to find out who reads our feeds is to use Feedburner, which has just been on the chopping block forever. Okay. Yep. Enough drama.
Oh, hey. What if there was an alternative to RSS where you could get 5 links a day?
Yeah, we told Sasha Grief that we would mention this because he does a great job with this little design kind of newsletter / website, sidebar.io. And I mentioned, and I just have a special place in my heart for any website that ends in .io, CodePen. Anyway, sidebar.io is 5 links a day. Every single day of just like the best kind of curated links kind of according to Sasha. And I think he does a good job with the logo. Super cool. You can kind of submit your own stuff. If you think you have something that's really good, hopefully that can make the grade. You can get it by email and you can choose. Do I want it every day or do I want to slow it down a little bit? Maybe twice a week, maybe once a week. It's just a nice little thing. Like, you know, if you've already opened your Twitter client and read all your tweets and you're like, I want more. People aren't tweeting fast enough. You could go over to Sidebar and suck down what the best links of the day are. So anyway, they're not sponsoring the show or anything. I just said, hey, I'm happy to mention it on the show.
Awesome.
We have a bunch of questions and answers to do.
All right, let's jump in to the meat and taters of the Shop Talk Show. Here we go. Clifton Kennedy writes in, says, when is responsive web design good or bad for a project? What are some things you should consider when deciding on using RWD or not? Samantha?
And I would extend it to ask Samantha, how do you handle RWD with style tiles? Are they totally unrelated concepts? Or?
No, I think style tiles actually really kind of came together at a good time where there was this missing artifact for responsive design, right? Like, you don't necessarily really need to comp up anything anymore, like all of the different types of screenshots anymore. You don't necessarily want to comp up all the different screen sizes. You need to be thinking more in terms of a system versus in pages for responsive design. So style tiles was a really great deliverable that sort of presents these elements right out the gate to a client as a system rather than as a page. So you're setting those expectations amongst the team and the client. So I think style tiles works really great with responsive design, but whether or not it's the right thing for a project or not, I have to say I'm a little biased. I think that responsive design is a great solution for most projects because you, at this point, I'm looking at my phone. I'm looking at a mobile device. I'm looking at multiple devices more often than I'm just exclusively looking at a desktop scenario. So really making sure that we create sites in the manner of responsive as responsive design rather than thinking of them being pages on web, these desktop things that are just these perfect, precious little websites, kind of like as a magazine, as we've thought about design up until now. So I won't say, though, that I think it's the absolute solution for everything. I think there's always exceptions. I've had several people present great case studies for options where maybe a mobile app or a mobile version of a site would be better. In many solutions. But if you're presenting content, especially content that's going to be updated frequently or accessed from just about anywhere, I think responsive design is the way to go. And if a lot of, I think there's a little bit of resistance towards it because designers see it as something different and something maybe harder, but it's not a matter of thinking of responsive design as something more than what you're doing. It's a matter of thinking of it differently and redefining your process and redefining how the web works.
That's good.
Comprehensive.
Sorry. I mean, give me a question where I'm really passionate and I'll talk about it. I can keep talking.
Heck yeah. I mean, not that you like control this or whatever, even if we want to go there, but even Twitter.com is a classic example of somewhere that probably like it's in a different league than probably the most of the websites in the world. So like having the fact that it has a mobile specific website probably makes more sense. And the fact that Twitter.com on a desktop isn't a responsive design probably makes sense. But I agree, most sites on the internet, it is kind of the right answer. What do you have to say about this, Dave?
Oh, well, so my response to this question is always, I'm dumb enough to try. So there may be places where responsive web design is not good, but I'm going to try anyway. I just feel like unless the company you're working for has a budget for like 15 different mobile clients and, you know, 10 different mobile websites or whatever, a tablet site, a desktop site, and a mobile site, you know, then responsive is really your only answer to cover the variety of devices. Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm at. I just feel like I'm dumb enough to try, but there are things I've come to this idea lately that complexity is the enemy of responsive web design. So if your app is super complex, which everyone likes to think it is, but tends to be like they just have too much crap and they need to pare it down. But if your app is super complex, then it's going to be harder to do responsive web design. It's not exactly that doesn't mean like our responsive has lost. It just means it's going to be more difficult when it's more complex. That's my summation. Ta-da.
Yeah, I think part of it's like really thinking about what responsive design means. I think immediately designers think, oh, well, that means screen sizes, right? But if you read Ethan's book and if you've heard him talk, it's really more about thinking about the context that somebody is viewing information in or viewing that website in. And if we as designers think of it as problem solving in that realm, it would really be a lot easier for us to kind of craft our process around that.
Then it becomes all websites. If we say RWD equals media queries, fluid layout, fluid media, then most, you know, that can pretty much work on kind of any site. And then if you add to that, I mean, you know, no dogma here, but then if you add to that just this idea of just general, just think about what it's like to view on other clients, and add to it. I just wrote a post about this on CSS Tricks about like maybe we could do a little bit of server side checking for this type of thing too, and maybe just like, oh, that, you know, these tabs aren't really working on the even with responsive design, because there just isn't enough room to have like six tabs across on an iPhone. There's just not enough room for your finger. Maybe just there, the rest of the design will be RWD, but just the tabs, we're gonna flip over to a different type of design pattern, so it makes it easy to switch between those tabs. That's not like that falls outside of the bounds of RWD. But it's in the ballpark, you know, it's still considering what that experience is like, you know, and changing it out. And that's kind of what I think RES is all about, that Luke Rabluski termed thing of responsive web design with server side components. And if you add all that together, now the blanket of what websites make sense is, I don't know, now we're getting closer to 100% of them, you know.
Yeah, I think like if you're doing a content site, a blog, like your typical blog, like there's no reason that can't be responsive. It's very easy to build that out to adapt just content you know, to a responsive layout. When you get into e-commerce, it starts getting like more difficult. That's the next step, right? Because you have all these checkout flows and these tables and stuff like that, but it can be done. You know, then the next part is like data visualization app, you know, all this responsive canvas and, you know, SVG and Flash or something maybe. That's where it gets super hard. So I don't know. That would be my, like, take an inventory of what you have and then, yeah, you might want to decide based on that. But your alternative in a mobile world is to build two websites now. So that could put you in the same problem that responsive web design has, in my opinion.
So do you guys think that responsive design is taking the soul out of design?
Oh. Yeah. drama.
Here, yeah, no, let's put in a drama sound effect there. Here we go. here's my comment. My mama always said, boring people get bored. Hey-o. Zing.
I get it. That's like a metaphor.
Boring people get bored. Yeah.
What do you think, Chris?
I think everybody, you know, this is the terriblest, leastest hot drama answer. And I think everybody who was involved with this drama agreed that everybody has good points on both sides of this. The symptoms so far have been that a lot of RWD sites are a little flatter. It's given birth to a flat design trend, if you will. And I think that's fine. But it doesn't mean that that has to stay that way forever. And it will evolve. This is the early days of all kinds of stuff on the web, and it doesn't force you to do flat design. There's nothing in the RWD handbook that doesn't exist that says you must not use gradients anymore. You must not use interesting Photoshop graphics in your design anymore because that's not cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah. It will, you know.
I feel like everything's being driven by devices, even in like Retina has a bigger impact on flat design than anything else because it's like, dude, I'm not going to make like 2x sprite sheets and stuff like that. I'm just going to use an icon font that's a single color, you know. It's just stuff like that.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, Retina is one of the biggest challenges, I think, as far as how do we keep things really rich and still serve a beautiful, clear experience. And because when you get into like a really large scale CMS project with lots and lots of images and the potential for lots of people to upload different things, you're getting into kind of crazy territory when it comes to Retina and having a design that supports large images.
Yeah, that's my opinion. And like you get, you know, there's a Samsung phone just got announced yesterday. It's like 5 inches big or something like that. I mean, it's just these devices are coming out.
Is that new Samsung phone that big?
I think so, yeah. And so it's just like, you know, crud. How do you deal with that? You just have to, now you have to deal, you know, so.
I didn't watch the video. That just came out today. Can you like put your finger over the screen and it kind of hovers?
You can hover but the bad part is, God, we're only on the first question. But anyway, the bad part is they forked the Android browser and made their own custom browser to add in hover doodads in these, like, you can like Jedi mind swipe the pages. And
when WebKit updates, they'll be lucky if they actually get around to updating theirs too. Oh, it's a custom fork.
Yeah, well, and like Android browser forked at like Chrome 15 or something like that. So it's like a fork of a fork, right? Dude, brutal. It's going to be brutal. Anyhow, Chris, you got a banjo?
That's the end of the end. That's the end lick.
All right, next question, or should we?
No, we got to do a sponsor. Okay. We're 37 minutes into this thing, and we only admitted to the first question. Let's do lynda.com. Go to lynda.com/shoptalk. It'll redirect, so it'll give us a cool cookie to remember and prove that their show is we've been doing a good job sending people there.
Yeah,
which I'm
guys,
sure we all will. Here, let me
work on our ROI there.
But if you use that link, literally, you get a free week of it. So if you've never signed up for lynda.com ever before, you'll get a week of it for free, which means you can go in there. And I have a series on there about WordPress design. There's tons and tons of stuff in there. Actually, my co-author on Digging Into WordPress, Jeff Starr, who we had on last week or a few weeks ago, he's got a one in there about WordPress security. So... And it's not just about WordPress. It's not even all about just web design. There's lots of stuff in there on just general graphic design. There's stuff about 3D design. There's stuff about running a business better. There's stuff about responsive web design. There's so many series on there. No other website has as much content as lynda.com has it. It's all video tutorial based with work, you know, like here's the files that follow it along. There's two different levels at Lynda that you can sign up for. The higher one has like downloads there. Like for my WordPress series, every single video has a set of files that you download in which we've moved the files, the code and the theme just a little bit further. It's pretty wild. It's pretty intense stuff. Okay. So lynda.com is awesome. Let's do another question. I'm going to read this one by Matt Soria. Are you ready?
Hit it. Yeah.
I'm working at a small design agency, and I'm just not happy with how things are there, so I'm looking for some new other websites to apply to. I found a couple with some open positions for web developers, and I want to apply, but I want to redo my website before I do. I have a site that's pretty bland and not very clean or impressive code-wise, but before, a deeper level, he kind of made it before he was ready. Anyway, he's between his full-time job and doing some freelance project, and he's just trying to figure out, should I redesign this thing before I even bother applying to these other web design agencies where he wants to work, or should he just apply anyway and not worry about his own site so much? So let's talk about that before we talk about his actual website. Like what do you think like about his thinking about this, Samantha? If you're like in this position where you're trying to get a new job, would you redesign first and then apply, or just apply and deal with it?
Well, I think it depends on what he's looking to get out of the new position. Like what sort of position he's trying to move into, what sort of things he's wanting to do. I think it's always helpful if you actually start creating the type of work you want to continue doing. So if he wants to do like really awesome responsive web design, for example, make sure the site's responsive. If you want to do really super creative stuff that has slick, awesome JavaScript transitions and stuff, you know, make your site that type of site that you want to actually create websites at an agency for. So it sort of depends on what he's looking to do in the future. I mean, I struggle with that myself. My site's been up for like 5 years. And I know before I even applied at Twitter, I thought, should I redesign my site? Because it's not what, it doesn't exemplify the type of work I do or the type of work I want to do. But
you were in this position.
I was in this position, but I went ahead and moved forward. I had a lot of work in my portfolio that I could show that showed the type of work I wanted to continue doing. So it depends on where you are in your career and where you want to move, I think. But it never hurts to redesign your portfolio if you have the time to do it.
There you go. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I mean... You can mess yourself up, getting in that pickle. Like it's the classic, like I want to blog, but I want to redesign my blog before I blog kind of pickle, you know? So you got to maybe get over that. What I would say is make sure your portfolio is, and maybe this is exactly directed at him, but I had a friend recently who had a portfolio online, but it didn't really show off what he did exactly. Like it was more illustration than like front end work, and he does both. And so I was just sort of like, dude, you got to up your front end work and we'll get you a job. But that's, you know, make sure your portfolio piece on your site, whether it's the new site or the old site, shows off what you actually do. That would be my simple advice.
That is a great segue into talking about. So I posted it in the chat room, and I know that that doesn't help you guys listening as a podcast, but this is Matt Soria, Soria, and you can just go to mattsoria.com and see the website that he's talking about. And I think it changed my mind. Like when I read this question and I was like, dude, you should probably redesign it, because I hate it would totally be a turnoff to me if I was, not that I have extensive hiring experiences, I don't, but I know that if I was hiring and I went to your site and it looked like junk, I'd be like, next, you know, mm-hmm. like it just would be the case, you know, unless you had an off portfolio too, where I could see that your good work is, this site isn't that bad. It's pretty, It uses some kind of really handwriting-y font, but it's a web font, you know, so it's not like he sliced up images or whatever. And there's, it's basically a portfolio. There's so much work here. Yeah. And it's all, like, pretty good. You know, like, he's got this really cool, distinctive line drawing style. And it's all, it seems all polished to me. And it shows that not only does he do just kind of, like, fine art stuff, but he does some design work, too. And then there's this section of animated GIFs. So it shows that he's not just, he doesn't just have one style. He's interested in, like, you know, he's proven that, oh, this looks like a cool techie thing to learn. I'll learn that and get good at that other format and painting and digital stuff. And it's like, this shows everything, Matt. Like, I know that you have high standards here and want to make it even awesomer than it is now. But this shows to me who you are and what you're capable of. I would not be embarrassed by this site. Anyway. Photography, too.
Did the question say what type of job he was looking for?
I'm working in a small design agency. I'm not happy with things are there, and I'm looking at other web design agencies to apply to. That's all.
Because this does have a lot of really great illustration, but if he is an awesome web designer, he might want to try at least add some more web design to the portfolio. Because I mean, mm-hmm. this is an amazing portfolio of really cool illustration, but it does look upon first like glance that it's mostly illustration.
So yeah.
Do you guys know Giovanni from Unmatched Style?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, love Gio, right? So he was he taught art, and he's a good illustrator as well. And he was like, gotta get a job and like feed the family or whatever at one point. And he ended up going to work for Gene as a front end developer. And he didn't even show off that he could draw or do any art at all. And all of a sudden, you know, he was just like drawing at his desk. I don't know what the exact story was, but he was like, I'll do some illustrations for this newsletter or something. And he was like, what? He drew some, you know, like the stuff that Gio draws, like a crazy T-Rex with the, you know, laser shooting out of his eye or whatever. He can draw anything, but
Sharktopus.
He just draws crazy stuff. Yeah.
And Gene is
like,
favorite.
Are you drew this? Are you freaking serious? So Matt, I wonder if you're like, oh, I got to feed the family. I guess I better get a web design job. Or can you find somewhere that you can keep doing what you love doing, which looks to me, your portfolio looks like illustration. So I would hope that you could find somebody to pay you to illustrate. If that's what you want to do, unless you're just sick of it and you want to get into web design, which I don't blame you. You know, web design is awesome. But that's all I would have to say about that.
Yeah, I think you got talent. I see the creativity going through his portfolio. So I would just up your front end. If you're going for a job, like a front end job, up that on your site and show that you can do that. I don't think you need a new site. We took down his site. We basically nuked his site. Install yeah. caching. That's yeah. all.
there's 86 of us in the chat room here. So you might Oops. Need a better server. okay. Let's do, you know, just cause here. Let's do Environments for Humans. Environmentsforhumans.com. They're our sponsor for a long time. They do all kinds of conferences. In fact, I think me and Samantha probably saw Gio together when we were in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Or no, I think it was in Columbia, South Carolina. You mean saw him speak?
Well, I've seen him speak, but weren't we just at
oh, yeah.
Orlando?
Yes, at In Control.
In Control, which is an Environments for Humans event.
Yeah, that was a great
event.
Which
was awesome. And Gio was there, so he saw him there. Anyway, they do those type of – Environments for Humans does these in-person conferences like In Control, but that's over. They also do – they do more of these online conferences that they call summits. And the most, you know, upcoming, closest to now summit is the Responsive Web Design Summit. We, you know, obviously this is a hot topic. We talked about it for a long time in this show. If you want to learn more about it, learn from the best of the best in a way, go to rwdsummit.com. And, you know, because this is online, it's also a lot more affordable too. You don't even have to leave your house. You can buy a ticket for your whole office, get them into a room, get a couch. I mean, can you imagine how much money you'd save rather than buying them all plane tickets to another performance? Anyway, it's 3 days, three kind of tracks. There's the kind of performance track the first day, a big hot topic in responsive women, then strategy the second day, and then kind of tech issues the third day. Tons of people speaking, including our own Dave Rupert. closing it out on the last day. So if you only buy one day, of course you buy the 18th. I think
I'm going to kind of go big or go home on my topic. So I need to nail that down, actually.
I'm working on a new talk, too. It doesn't fit this topic, but it's scary. 20% off with the coupon code SHOPTALK.
Mm-hmm. Dude, that's a deal. That's a deal.
Do that. We got more. We got Samantha here. We got to talk.
Yeah, let's talk some shop. Here we go. Let's see here. Here's one from Usama Bugnok. I murdered that last name. I apologize. Samantha, do you think that ThemeForest.net is killing web design? Because there's a lot of themes there that don't respect web standards and mostly based on bad practice web design.
ThemeForest?
For example, any sort of theme shop, I guess.
We could put in there stuff that have pre-built themes that, you know, even WordPress.com or Squarespace or Verb or all these things that you just get a design for free. Are we out of business or what?
Yeah, that's is a really interesting question, because I've gotten that a lot, specifically when I speak at conferences in the Drupal community. You know, I am of the belief that good design is good design. Like, if you need a theme, and that's what you need in order to get a nice, clean design on your site, because you have a limited budget or you just don't have the resources, a theme is the way to go. Now, whether or not the themes are up to the standards and quality that we as a community think should be distributed, that's sort of another question, I think. But in general, I'm not against the idea of themes as being a solution for some people, some companies, some agencies of the world. Because at the end of the day, the goal is to have a better, more beautiful, usable web. And if themes help us get there, that's a way to go. But I mean, at the end of the day, the people who have the budgets for unique, custom web designs, those people aren't going away. Like, anyone who has a budget for that sort of stuff is still going to come to agencies to get that type of work done. What do you guys think? Do you think the quality of themes that are in ThemeForest are subpar, or?
Well, if they're subpar, then they're subpar, and that sucks. I don't think everything in ThemeForest is subpar. I'm quite sure that it isn't. But this has come up a couple of times in the show, and I think it's pretty interesting. No, of course, I don't think that. I think take the almost the extreme other side of the thing, and I think this is kind of good for the web to have well-made. I'm happy about things like Squarespace and Verb and WordPress.com that are like hosted themes, so that they're automatically updated. It's not like you buying buying your own hosting and hosting your own MySQL database, and all that stuff feels very like kind of gross to me now. Of course, that's what CSS Tricks does, but this kind of a different thing. Like I want that control as a nerd, you know.
Yeah.
But for most people, yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people have come to me, like especially designers out of school, and asked me if they should use a theme for their portfolio site, and that's sort of a different question too, right? Like, as we as a community, as designers, should we be using other themes? And I'm the first to say that I taught myself a lot of HTML, CSS, and WordPress through picking apart a theme. But I do think that if you want to be a better designer, if you want to understand the web, a theme is not the best way to go. I think you should use it as a learning experience, but you should be building your own stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a quick story. There's this guy I know named Aaron Keim, and I, you know, he's went on to do some cool things. I actually have a ukulele that he built for me. Maybe I'll play that on the next show. That's really great. I really love it. One of his recent projects is, The Quiet American, and he's just him and his wife, and he puts out these CDs. So the URL is quietamericanmusic.com. It's on Squarespace, and the site looks great, I think. I used to do websites for him and some other people that he knew from other bands that they did, and it would be just me, and I would, just because I know it, you know, I would install WordPress and I would design a site for them, and I would get it up there and I would control the whole thing. And recently one of the guys emailed me and says, "Hey, why is our site down? Look at this." And I was like, "Ugh, great. You know, some like site I haven't touched in years goes down, and now I have to like dig up the FTP password and figure it out." And I go in there, and it was me, I hadn't, well, some other person took over the design of it, but whatever. WordPress hadn't been updated in a long time, and it got hacked to shreds. I had to go through all the you know, the, like, just what I want to do on a Wednesday morning, right? Go in and fix all the template files. Thankfully, the database was okay, but it was more hacked than I've ever seen any other theme site ever. It was such a disaster. And then I get the site back, and I'm like, okay, here it is. And it's just a super simple site with a homepage and a contact form and a couple other sub pages. It was stupid for that ever have to have been a Chris Coyer project. That they're way better off. And now I look at Quiet American Music. It's on Squarespace. It looks fantastic. It looks very customized. It looks perfect for their needs. They'll never be hacked. They'll never have downtime. It's trivially priced. This is good for the web. This is perfect for somebody like Quiet American Music. It's perfect for your hairdresser. It's perfect for all these things. This isn't even a Squarespace ad. I just think this is right. But you're not driving designers out of business. There's plenty of work for us to do more custom solutions. You know, if the Quiet American became a multi-million dollar band, they'll probably need more than Squarespace has to offer them. And at that point, we can step in as designers.
Nailed it, man.
All I have to say about that.
It is a question, like, you know, if I put out my crappytheme.com on ThemeForest and it's $2, it looks good enough and people install it, but it's like everything's in a span tag. You know, I have fleeced somebody out of their $2. I always come down to it's you get what you pay for in web design. So if you paid $2 for a theme, it's probably worth $2, you know, in SEO and all that web standards and everything. But not everyone, this sounds terrible, but not everyone needs, you know, the $50 million website or whatever. So I don't think it's killing web design. And what I say every time I think we discuss this question is, if you, Osama, can't be better than these themes, then you have a problem. Like if you don't, as a web designer, if you don't offer services better than these themes, then you're in a tough situation.
I think in general, you get what you pay for, right?
Yeah.
Like, and everybody should sort of know that. If you're getting a theme for $20, there's a reason it's $20.
Yep. So anyhow,
Rafa Garcia asks, how do you deal? I'm just switching topics just so we can get some more questions in here. How do you guys deal with vertical rhythm and fluid images? So I kind of put this in here to see what Samantha has to ask, because your typography is a big love of yours, right?
Yeah.
How strict are you about the concept of vertical rhythm?
Not very strict on the web. I mean, to be honest, like I think that I had this sort of wake up call when I moved to the web. Like I to some degree am who I am as a web designer because I had this wonderful wake up call. A group of web developers hired me, a great group of guys who taught me everything I know about the web, but I was a pain in their ass. You know, because I wanted the web to do all the things that I could do in print. And that's sort of why I am as kind of lenient, I guess, when it comes to things like that, because I really understand the benefits. I understand after doing things the hard way, the benefits to sort of letting the web be its own medium and have its own kind of living, breathing thing. So vertical rhythm, I think it's a great thing if you want to put the time in, but is the result really worth the time that's put in to achieve that?
So what we're talking about is this, you know, imagine a paragraph of text on the web and imagine this like invisible horizontal lines underneath it that are steady, evenly spaced apart like a notebook page is. And as that goes up and down, of course, those lines are going to match up perfectly at the baseline of the lines of that paragraph. But then let's say you have a header, and let's say you have a block quote, and let's say you have some code even that you've pasted on there. Can you organize your type such that that invisible notebook paper of lines underneath it matches up to the baseline of every single one of those things all the way down? And if you accomplish that, which is a much more common thing to have match up in print design, because it's things are very absolute. You know, it's ink on paper. You can kind of be absolute about these things. But if you do that, supposedly there's some kind of, you know, some good feeling to it, or that your eye kind of dances across the page like a perfect ballerina or something, you know, that there's just a better feel to it. Was that a fair assessment?
That was a great explanation. I think in general, like, just really embracing the fluidity of the web is, while it is wonderful and there's this magical feeling when it happens, I think there's also a magical feeling when the web has this really fluid, lifelike way of organizing itself too. And so as designers, sort of embracing that to some degree, that's at least sort of how I feel about it.
It's certainly not a bad concept, certainly. It's a good concept. I think Rafa is specifically asking then, well, now we have this concept of fluid images. So let's say you have, you know, a picture of a dog on a site and you've set with 100% height auto, as that parent element kind of gets wider and smaller, you know, pixel by pixel, the aspect ratio of it changes, and it'll pull up the text underneath it as it gets smaller, and your vertical rhythm is totally off then, because it just pulled that up. So you're like, ugh, what do I do? Do I put that picture in a box that only gets smaller by certain chunks so that the text underneath it keeps that vertical rhythm? Or do I employ some kind of fancy JavaScript thing, which I've seen? I think Dan Eden has like a fancy script that kind of deals with this kind of thing. Or... more realistically, I can't think of a way to frame this other than just saying how I feel about it. Like, maybe we can just throw vertical rhythm out the window a little bit on the web. I mean, it makes a bigger deal on a newspaper when you can see, like, you see tons of text on one page. What you actually look at on a screen is often a lot smaller. Like, what does it matter that the vertical rhythm is the same for text that you can't even see anymore because you've scrolled away from it? Like, what does that matter? Anyway, as long as it looks good and it feels well spaced and the typography is otherwise good, what does vertical rhythm matter? Anyway,
I feel like verticality on the web has been difficult its whole life. I mean, you can't vertically center things very well. You can't, if you put vertical text inside a box and then the text gets too long, it gets cut off or pops out of the box, stuff like that. Vertical has just been tough, and it always is tough to ensure. And so that's kind of my feeling on that. Yeah. So vertical rhythm is kind of like cool when it works, but it's tough. So
how much typography is there in a style tile? Like a lot? Would it be a complete set of typography choices?
Depends on the client and what you're designing. For publications, I generally do include a lot of typography, especially a publication who feels that their brand is represented by their typeface that they've been using for like years and years and years in print. So, yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of challenges with that when, you know, the one typeface that a publication feels embodies their brand essence is not licensed for the web. I then have to figure out how I can convince them that another typeface that is licensed for the web feels the same. And that's something I've done quite a bit through style tiles.
Cool.
Font licensing, man. That's some hot drama.
I'll give you a sound effect for that one. That's some
it's really the go-to.
It's the go-to sound. The actual like little area on the soundboard is wearing down right there. So. Boy, boy, boy. Well, what do you think, guys? One more, or should we wrap it up, Chris?
It's more Sam? Like Samantha. Do you have a hard stop?
I've got some time. I've got till 11:30.
Okay. Well, we won't go that long. But let's just finish up with let's finish up with one designy thing here from Joe Anderson, who I think brings some baggage to this question. Perhaps, what do you think is lacking with the current with regards to education and design critique for the current generation of developers? I get a sense, Joe, that you think that there is a lack of design critique in the current generation of developers. I feel like maybe the people that you work with or the younger folks in this field don't appreciate critique. Is that the case, do you think, overall?
Well, I think that this has been a topic that's come up a bit on Dribbble. And in general, I've experienced this firsthand working with teams, especially of newer designers. Because, I mean, this is a topic that goes beyond the design community. But in general, there's this feeling that a lot of folks for the next generation are, you know, they've been pat on their back all of their lives. And they're sort of used to being told how awesome they are all the time. And that's sort of counterintuitive to how you become a better designer. Being a better designer is sort of developing this thick skin and understanding how to evolve your craft and your style over a period of time. And so, yeah, I think that developing a critiquing system for yourself is an important thing. I think teams developing a critiquing system is really important. But what that is really depends on the type of work you're doing too. But I'm a big fan. I have a I would call them like a circle of trust of other designers that I feel that I really respect and look up to. And I try and shop my stuff out when I'm working on it, my personal stuff, to get their opinion as a critique mechanism.
People that you know are going to tell you what you need to hear kind of thing.
Right. Like yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, I think there's been quite a bit of fun poked on Dribbble about, hey, you know, nice shot, bro. That sort of stuff, right? Like, everybody's just super nice to each other. And I'm all about being super nice. I'm actually the first to say that I would much rather online everybody be very supportive to each other as a community. But there's ways of doing critique in a way that you're being supportive, but also giving critical feedback that can help the person be a better designer. And I think we as a community have a lot of work to do there.
Totally. God, I wonder if Dribbble could encourage that differently somehow. Like you set a Dribbble on like critique mode, and then people have, you know, I find it's always an interesting thing over there on how, if you post something like, is it up for, is critique the name of the game for the comment thread, or is it, or what's the deal?
It may be worthwhile to have like some sort of option that says I'm opening this shot up for critique. Because some people don't use it for critique. Some people are showing work that's already been released because they're under NDA or whatnot. But for those who are actually seeking critique, it would be really helpful, I think, for them to specify, like, I am looking for critique on this.
Totally. And like it or not, it's your portfolio. Like it or not, I look through Dribbble to find good designers to contact. So if you put a bunch of stuff on there that's, like, really early, too early for critique, that's hurting your portfolio a bit.
Yeah,
you know, that's a little scary. So I wonder if they, you know, not that I, you know, they can do whatever they want. You know, Dribbble's amazing. They've done bigger things than I've ever done. But it is something to consider, I think. Now, sometimes I posted something the other day that was like the screenshot of the bottom right of a browser window. And they were like, no. The shadows are all wrong. I'm like, I didn't do that shadow. It's a screenshot, dude. That's just what you get when you screenshot a window.
Lord help the man who doesn't kern a W, you know, because you can come under some great fire. Yeah. And I do think there needs to be some proper design or critique etiquette. You know, the ability to troll anonymously online is too great. But, you know, then again,
being overly nice doesn't help either. It's a very specific language.
Yeah, if everything's awesome, it's like people get big-headed about that. But, I mean, not that people aren't doing awesome work, but, you know.
The thing with critique, I think, is that it's sort of specific to the person. It's a growing experience. So some people may need to be critiqued in different ways. So, in general, like, Dribbble may not be the best forum for something like that. Or maybe there's, you know, like some sort of journey you go on as a designer, and it's indicated in some sort of little infographic, but you're looking for a certain level of critique.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because totally. I know for me, like when I'm starting, I've taught beginning web design before, if I come like blazing out of the gates with some really hardcore feedback, I'm going to actually scare them away. Like it's something that you sort of work into. You sort of develop a trust and relationship with somebody, and whether it's be an individual or a team or a class full of people, and then you get into that really meaty critique over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And look, and you are teaching this class, and you're approaching critique in your own way, but it's not like you're ignoring it. And it, so what's, you know, what do we think about Joe's question of like, is critique getting worse? I mean, I don't know if any of how you can be qualified to answer this question, because you'd have to like be familiar with every teaching institution in the world.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think in general, the web has opened it up for anyone to have an opinion, which kind of changes the whole ballgame when it comes to critique, right?
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Because non-pros can offer their opinion, and it's the same hierarchy as a pro, kind of.
Right.
Because it's just a comment in a thread.
But by the same stroke, you might be like, well, they're exposed to more critique then because of the internet. Oh, I don't know if we can answer that in a final way, but that was a good conversation all around.
Pretty good. You want to banjo us out on that one?
I don't know. How are we going to...
All righty. Samantha, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to sit down and listen to some sound effects with us. Before we go, how can people get in touch with you, follow you on Twitter, give you money? How does that work?
I am Samantha Toy on Twitter. You can check out StyleTiles, which is styletile.es. And and my blog, which one day I will update when I actually go through my redesign, is badassideas.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And of course, everyone, thanks for coming out in the chat room. We appreciate you guys listening in live. Follow us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter for awesome updates, very infrequent ones. And buy a shirt, shoptalkshow.com/store. And Chris, you got anything for us?
No, just thanks for joining us, Samantha. Shoptalkshow.com.
All right. Play that banjo.
I have a team of engineers wondering why I'm dancing in here.
This is so wonderful.
Shop Talk Show.
Perf, nailed it, dude.